You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Really good to see so many of you this morning in the dry. Well done. As Rory says, I'm Sarah Edwards. I'm the director of the Just Money Movement. We're an organisation that has a vision of a world where money can help shape a greener, fairer future. So we're going to be talking about that this morning. I'm going to say a little bit about what we'll be talking about and then introduce our panellists to you. As people of faith, as people of goodwill, we want to do good with our finances, don't we? We want to use money in ways that care for people and for the planet. But the money that we put into our bank accounts doesn't just sit there. Many of the UK's big banks lend or invest in companies involved in fossil fuels, literally funding the climate crisis. So we need to be asking ourselves, what kind of world are our banks shaping and what can we do to change that? Just a couple of facts about that. The five biggest UK high street banks, Barclays, HSBC, Santander, NatWest and Lloyds, collectively have poured $556 billion into the financing of fossil fuels since the Paris Agreement on climate change in 2015, including $268 billion that's been lent or invested in companies involved in fossil fuel expansion. It's clearly that is incompatible with limiting global heating and preventing climate catastrophe. And we're already seeing the impact of this, aren't we? We all know this in terms of particularly the lives of the most vulnerable communities around the world, with storms becoming more powerful and happening more regularly, rainfall patterns shifting, causing devastating droughts and floods, severe heat waves causing suffering and death in communities worldwide. These are facts that all of us, I think, here are very familiar with. But a growing movement of individuals and churches want to take action, particularly in this area of finance. Big banks do have a lot of power, but we have power too. We can all take action to help shape a financial sector that works for the common good. And today we have a panel representing a number of groups that are seeking a greener use of money with a range of approaches and tactics. We have Sharon Hall from Operation Noah, a Christian charity working with the church to inspire action on the climate crisis. We have Drew James from Christian Climate Action, a community of Christians supporting each other to take meaningful action in the face of imminent and catastrophic climate breakdown. And we have Rosie Venner, who works with me at the Just Money Movement, equipping Christians and churches to connect faith and money for a greener, fairer future. And we'll hear from each of them in turn about their approaches. And then we'll have plenty of time for questions and discussion afterwards. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Sharon to start us off. Sharon.
Great, good to be here. So I'm Sharon Hall from Operation Noah, and grateful to Sarah for highlighting some of the urgency of the climate crisis, which I'm sure we're very well aware of. We know that warmer oceans are leading to more severe hurricanes. I was reading that there's somewhere in Alaska which has had three storms in the last fortnight. So whatever we've experienced with bad weather over the last few days, it's not quite what they've had. They've also contending with the extra issue of permafrost melting. And so the way that's affecting the river levels has meant that one of school in particular is just not usable anymore. So what can we all do in the face of what we know is a serious climate crisis? One of the principles that we use at Operation Noah is about prioritising the actions that have the biggest impact. So even with an individual, the average UK person maybe has a carbon footprint, equivalent emissions of carbon dioxide of about 9 tonnes per year. Different organisations have different figures, but round about 9 tonnes a year. And if you live car free, that saves 2.4 tonnes. So that's a big one. If you have a plant-based diet, that saves 0.8 tonnes. And even if you reduce the meat that you eat, that has a significant impact. Avoiding one flight from London to Berlin would save 0.6 tonnes. And that's the equivalent of 3 years of recycling. Now, I'm not saying don't recycle. Recycling is important. But recognise the acts that you take that have the biggest impact. So if we get our own house in order, even on a small scale, we've got far more integrity and we're not hypocritical when we then start challenging others to make a difference with how they're acting as well. So the average UK bank holder holds between £5,000 and £6,000 in the bank. If that person switched their bank from the worst fossil fuel funding bank to the best, that would save 1.7 tonnes. So it's a big impact. If you've got lots of money, you have a lot bigger impact than that. If your friends have lots of money, one of the biggest actions that you could take for the climate crisis might be talking to them about the money and what bank they use. If you know any billionaires, think about the impact that you could have. But also, if you're part of a larger organisation, a charitable organisation, maybe a church or faith institution, as a member or a supporter, then you can find out more about their finances and use your voice to persuade them to look at their investments and what actions they're taking. So this is one of the things that Operation NOAH and our partners and supporters have been doing over the last years. Around 10 years we were campaigning to try and get UK churches to move their money out of fossil fuels. And probably most of you will know we've had some real success with this. Most of them now have pledged and have moved their investments out of fossil fuels. So our supporters were asking local churches to divest. They were praying, they were creating videos, asking the diocese to move their money, putting motions to the diocese, putting motions to the national synod bodies. We don't know the full scale of the money that's moved because they tend to keep these things fairly private. But in 2015, we know that the Church of England had nearly 200 million invested in BP and Shell alone. And now they have none. And others are moving too. That impact that they're making is also, thank you, is also knocking on. We're seeing other pensions funds, much bigger funds, also making the move out of fossil fuels. As well as taking money out of fossil fuels and leaving them in the ground, we urgently need to be scaling up investments in proven climate solutions. And if you visit our Operation NOAH store, which will be open just behind us there after this event, you can find out more, get inspired about different climate solutions, play our Greenopoly game. In June, Just Money Movement and Operation NOAH launched the Green Investment Declaration. So this is a new focus for us, asking churches and faith institutions to take practical steps to make sure their investments line up with their values, to use their money to build a better world, including tackling climate change. So if the world moved the $570 billion of annual planned oil and gas investments into renewables, that could fully finance wind and solar expansion in line with the 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature rise that the Paris Agreement was trying to keep us to. And actually, in January this year, the International Energy Agency, IEA, published figures that showed investment in low carbon electricity is actually likely to top $900 billion this year. So there's been huge solar panels expansion in China. They built as much new capacity last year as the world did in 2022. So there's really positive things happen, but oil and gas investments are also still rising. They're expected to increase by 7% this year, and they're only spending maybe about 4% or less on clean energy. So faith institutions have a massive potential impact, managing about $3 trillion of assets around the globe. So the Green Investment Declaration that we're pointing people towards, asking their institutions to pledge to invest in these climate solutions, starts at an acorn level where they're just starting to make some progress in this area. Once they've invested and they've told people about their investment in a climate solution, they can be at sapling level. Once 5% of their investments are there, they can be at oak level. So it grows from an acorn to an oak as their investment grows. Reforestation is one really good climate solution, but it's also a good symbol of green growth. When we launched the Green Investment Declaration, Reverend Margot Hodgson said, "Green investment is a prophetic response to the climate crisis, because it allows churches and faith institutions to model a greener world and helpfully, hopefully, lead others to do the same." So do come find out more. We've got some leaflets and we've got a stand as well. Great to be here.
Thanks so much, Sharon. really encouraging to hear in the context of quite a bleak picture in terms of fossil fuel investments of the changes that are happening and the things that we can do as individuals and institutions and the potential impact at least that those can have. So thank you for that, Sharon. We're going to hand over now to Drew from Christian Climate Action to tell us about what his approach has been and some of the things he's been involved in. Over to you, Drew.
Hello, everyone, and thanks, Sarah. This is my story about falling out of love. Falling out of love with Barclays. What do Barclays High Street customers think of
I mean, there's some obvious answers to that, like they're absolutely rubbish at customer care, and they're closing branches left, right and centre. But quite a lot of them will also know about Barclays' 20-odd years of sponsoring the Premier League. They also sponsor women and girls football, sponsoring Wimbledon. And if you're in posh parts of London, obviously you'll know Sadler's Wells and the Donmar Theatre. But probably what most Barclays customers won't know about Barclays is that their commercial customers are polluting Alberta with tar sands. They're poisoning drinking water by supporting fracking companies in Pennsylvania. And they're disrupting and destroying farming and fishing communities in the Niger Delta with oil spills. And so how is it that most people who bank with Barclays don't know this? Well, I'm going to read you something from Barclays' website. It says, "We've long seen the value of sponsorship as part of our business strategy. And we have a substantial portfolio spanning across entertainment and arts, sport, helping us to build our brand and reputation through our sponsorships and strengthening our support to communities." So the story they like to tell is of corporate, what's the phrase I'm thinking of? Responsible corporate citizenship. And it's in response to that myth that some protesters have gone to disruptive action, such as breaking of windows, occupying buildings, and disrupting annual general meetings of the bank. And then that's been also been challenged so that the social license that's been gained by multi-million pound sponsorships is being challenged by a whole cohort of climate justice groups taking soft action, soft pressure against the banks. So that includes actions such as boycotting sponsorship, shareholder actions at AGMs, and also discrete conversations with universities, with charities, with faith groups in order to move them in the right direction. Through meetings, emails, prayer vigils, Christian Climate Action were involved with moving Christian Aid away from its bank with Barclays. This was along with Operation Noah and with Just Money, of course. After a year, we were very happy to see that change made. We took similar action with Oxfam and also with here at Greenbelt. That took about a year of emails. Then in December last year, the cathedral at forgotten where it is for a moment. Just Sheffield, that was it. Sheffield Cathedral. Now, of course, in each of these cases, it wasn't a failure of ethics. It was simply inertia, and really for us as faith organisations, they were soft targets, and we continued to pressure in the faith community, but also elsewhere. In 2022. CCA, Christian Climate Action, and others were getting involved with the disruption of annual general meetings of the banks and the major oil companies down in London. And I felt moved by faith to get involved with this. So I went along to the AGM of Barclays in Manchester with a group of others. And what we did was took it in turns to interrupt the address of the chair, calling him to account on Barclays' record. I stood on my chair. And I remember accusing the directors of a breach of fiduciary duty. Then we did the same in Glasgow in 2023 with Lloyds Bank. What's the point of putting ourselves through that sort of stress? Is it just an annoying waste of time? Well, I take the view that what we're doing is making acts of prophetic witness, and we're taking them to the heart of the beast when we do this. This year, I was back at Barclays again, up in Glasgow, and I was commissioned by a group of nuns to ask a question. So for a change, I wasn't thrown out. But I did get to ask their question, which they've asked me not to reveal. But listening to the chair's address, it was interesting to learn something about fracking, that Barclays have taken a decision very much to support their customers who were involved in pure play fracking in the United States, because it's regarded as having low commercial risk. The fracking wells have got a lifespan of 4 or 5 years. So low risk compared to a new oil field or gas field or coal mine, because they may have a lifespan of 30, 40 years. And who knows, with in the current circumstances with the climate, these could very well become stranded assets. So here's the thing, obvious really, which is that banking policy is driven by commercial risk. And if you look at, you study closely Barclays' published policies on the web, you'll find that loss of reputation is very much a commercial risk for the banks. And so that is why actions such as boycotting, et cetera, are taking place, because we're looking to damage reputation. I was surprised to learn while I was doing all of this, doing my research, that the National Trust, which I'm a member of, and I guess quite a lot of you are members of them, that they bank with Barclays. I was horrified by that. So I thought, somebody's got to do something about it. I wonder who can do something about that. And I realised it had to be me. So I got some help from Operation Noah and from Green Christian, and through the Community of Christian Climate Action, we got together enough support to put in a resolution. It was all done at breakneck speed because there's a time limit for getting resolutions in. And our resolution before the National Trust was that they set a target for Barclays, which is that Barclays are to require their customers in the energy and power sector to limit their financed emissions to 10%. So that would be a massive reduction, but it would be meeting 2050 targets. So it wasn't an unreasonable request. So we put that to the National Trust. And in November 2022, we turned up with Extinction Rebellion, with a samba band. We had dancing blackbirds. We had a vicar on a tandem with a skeleton on the back. And it was all taken in good spirit by the National Trust. We also used the methodology of craftivism. And so we took along crocheted oak leaves made by a crochet circle down in Surrey with these little cardi messages on. We had embroidered napkins, which were themed with the passions of the individual trustees. And we also took along cardi cards, on which we'd had handwritten messages with a quote from Midsummer Night's Dream, which is on this, which you can look at it later. I know a bank where the wild thyme blows, where the ox lips grow and violets in their heads. So it's those kind of subtle messaging that actually got to the heart of the trustees. And they came and searched us out. We didn't have to go and find them. So we got real quality face-to-face time with those people. So craftivism is a really, really great way of doing this. And it brought us an ongoing conversation, which we've had continuing over the last 2 years. Last year, we were back again in Swindon, and we took a pop-up art gallery themed on the loss of the Sycamore Gap Tree. And we also presented the chair with a work of art by an artist called Nat Morley, called the Sixth Mass Extinction. It's an image of the Tree of Life being cut down by two people who look like really nice people, just not understanding what they're doing. As a result of that, I've now got a direct email conversation going with the chair of the National Trust. Problem is that they're still very much wedded to the idea of engagement. Our vote back in 2022 wasn't successful, but the National Trust, they were grateful to us for putting that resolution to them, because it bought them direct access to Barclays' senior leadership team, which they didn't have before. They only had it through one of these lobbying companies, like the ones the Church of England were using. So this brought them direct negotiating access to them. And they were, as I said, they were grateful to us for that, but it wasn't actually what we wanted. We wanted something much, much firmer than that. We're going to be back again this year, and I think I've probably run out of time, haven't I? Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Drew. That's brilliant. Really good to hear about the creative disruption that you've been involved with to tackle some of that, particularly the corporate reputations of some of those big banks. We're going to hear now from Rosie Venner, who about her work with the Just Money movement. Rosie.
True, that was really hard to follow because that was really inspiring. And I really want to encourage people to come and have a look at the craftivist items and things here, those crocheted oak leaves. They're just fantastic, so please do come and have a look at them afterwards. I was thinking this morning, when I first came to Greenbelt as a teenager, like well over 20 years ago, there's no hope in hell that I would have been up at 9:30 in the morning at a panel session in the rain. Thinking about banks, I just wouldn't have made that connection at all between faith and the things that I was concerned about. And I certainly would never have imagined that I would actually be up on a panel talking about those issues. But for me, I think I just were thinking that Greenbelt, I think, played a really large part in shaping that interest for me, in sparking that interest, because Greenbelt is the place where you do get a chance to talk about the big issues, to talk about the economy, to talk about power, to get to some of those root causes of injustice. So I'm very grateful to Greenbelt, really, for the part it played in shaping my faith and my activism. That has made me really passionate about talking to other people about finance. And I think that's probably the reason many of you are here today, is because that you've had something that has sparked a desire in you to learn more, to engage more. Many of you probably already active campaigners on these issues. So I just, yeah, I was thinking about the journey that I've been on. And I think part of wanting to have this conversation, this panel this morning, is how do we bring more people along with us in asking those questions and getting to grips with things that can seem quite abstract, but are shaping a world that is quite scary in terms of what's being financed and what the future may look like if we continue along that track. So to talk about a little bit about the Just Money movement and the kind of work that we're doing, I think part of what we do is around that education, is trying to spark that interest in people, particularly amongst churches in the UK, people of all ages, to help people join the dots, to ask questions like, why does it matter where we bank? Why does it matter where money's invested? How do we take action as individuals? How do we put pressure on the churches and institutions, organisations that we're part of? So that we start to not see the finance sector and banking and investing as something that is abstract or neutral or, dare I say, boring, but something that we have an agency and power to influence, because it's shaping real impacts in the world, and that's something that we should care about. And because at some sense we have an economy and we have a finance sector that is fundamentally not serving people and planets. And we can't rest until we have a finance sector and an economy that does allow people to flourish, that does allow nature to flourish. These are really important questions for us to wrestle with. And so at Just Money Movement, education is a really important part of what we do. The resources that we produce to help people have those kind of conversations within their church, within their community. And just as an example of that, so we worked earlier in the year with the Student Christian Movement to produce a resource on ethical banking so that they and their networks could talk amongst their peers with other students around choosing an ethical bank. Because for many people, the bank that they choose as a young adult is the bank that they then stay with for decades. And we've had conversations at the stall this week and say, well, you know, been with one of the big banks for 40 years, 50 years, because it's just, it's habit now, it's what I know. And so having those conversations really early on when people are at those moments where they're making those decisions can be really important. But at any age, it's having that conversation to say, you know, think about where you're banking, think about the kinds of issues that you're concerned about, and start to join the dots. And, you know, I was looking at, I was trying to get a sort of handle on, you know, how many people are banking with the big five. And it is many of us. And I think there's about over 75% of the UK population with one of the big five banks, and the likes of HSBC and Barclays. And that's not because we don't care, but it's because we maybe haven't made that link yet. And I think with education then, hopefully comes action. And that might look like switching bank. And we really encouraged when we were at Greenbelt last year that many of the conversations that we were having with people on the stool was around banking, around people who had switched or were thinking about switching or wanting more information. And I've seen that just grow and grow. I think partly thanks really to the likes of CCA and Operation Noah and others who are just getting those conversations there and raising that kind of consciousness. As Sharon said, we've been working on the big bank switch, and we can tell you a bit more about that if you're interested in what it might mean for you to switch to a greener bank. There's opportunities for individuals to switch. We also work alongside churches. Every year we produce a guide, the Greener, Fairer Banking Guide, which takes a look at some of the more ethical greener banks that churches and charities can switch to. Very conscious that for many people that's a more challenging task than switching as an individual. But lots of churches wanting to do that, now part of their eco-church journey, they've looked at their building, they've looked at their land, now they want to look at their finances. But we're well aware that sometimes people don't have the time, don't know where to do that research, and so we try and make that as simple as possible for you to look at where you might be able to bank as a church, with a bank that's not investing in fossil fuels or other ethical issues that you might be concerned about. So alongside the education and equipping people for action, we also do some of that engagement directly with banks. So that might be similar to, as Julia's been talking about, going along to an AGM and training people up in shareholder and AGM activism, so you can go along and ask those disruptive questions and go back the next year and hold the bank to account on what they've promised. We've had meetings with HSBC about their investments in plastics, and we've seen shifts in their policy. I think there's evidence that when you do that really deep engagement, if you can do it and you do it consistently and you hold them to account on what they've said that they will do, that you do start to see some shifts in policy, getting those banks along that trajectory that we need to see them moving much, much faster along. So if that's the kind of thing that interests you, if you want to be able to speak to others about banking and investing but you don't know where to start, if you'd like to get more involved in the AGM activism side of things, then please do. We'd love to equip you to get involved in that, or we'd love to hear about what you're already doing, because I know many people are already involved in these issues. And as I think we've all been saying, individual actions can be really empowering, but it's really, really powerful when we do things collectively. Another thing that we're involved with, which you can be involved with too, is we're working alongside Make My Money Matter, who've been doing lots of campaigning on green finance, particularly around pensions and banks, to draw churches' voices together, particularly focusing on talking to the banks about their fossil fuel financing. So we've put together a statement of concern with Make My Money Matter for churches to sign on to. Churches together in Britain and Ireland have been really supportive of it. In the coming days and weeks, there'll be opportunities for churches and charities to add their names to that statement of concern, which we'll bring to the banks in October in Good Money Week. So if you'd like to be part of that, please do come and have a word with us. We'd love to have hundreds, thousands of churches' names on that to show the level of concern that there is, because it becomes then a reputational risk for the banks to continue to invest in fossil fuels, and that we sometimes need to speak their language in order to get them to wake up.
Thanks very much, Rosie. Hearing about connecting faith and finance, lots of resources for educating yourself, taking action and getting involved in campaigns. Before we open to questions from the floor, I'm just going to ask you a few questions, take advantage of my position as chair. So starting with you, Rosie, you talked about advice about ethical and greener banks. Lots of banks are keen to stress their green credentials. How do we know who to trust? Are there good examples of green banks? And what about greenwashing and what's being done about that?
Really good question. So I think lots of us don't have the time to trawl through the ethical policies of banks, and we may not be able to unpick the language that's there. So I think it is really important that we can, for ourselves and for others, find easy ways of identifying greener banks. So I think the good news is that a lot of that research has been done. There are lots of organisations who do take that time to trawl through the policies and to track where banks are on different issues. Places that I would point people towards, which the UK Consumer Organisation did a really good piece of work around looking at greener banks, and there's a freely accessible guide on their website to the UK's greenest banks. So they pick out Nationwide, Triodos and Co-op as their top three. And those are the three that often come up if you look at ethical consumers resources as well. So there are places that you can look if you want to see and compare. And what I think you're particularly looking for is a commitment in their policy to not invest in fossil fuel expansion, but to go beyond that as well, like Sharon was saying about investment in climate solutions as well. So not just negative screening in their lending, but actually what are they committed to? And I think there are lots of values-based banks out there who are putting people and planet first, and there are banks that are leading the way, which is really encouraging. The Global Alliance for Banking on Values is a really inspiring network. I never would have thought that reading about the work that banks are doing would be inspiring, but the case studies on their website, there's over 70 banks around the world who are part of that network, who are doing some incredible things in terms of their investing and their lending, and from very small scale banks up to much larger banks, and who have real passionate leadership on these issues. And in the UK, I think Unity Trust and Ecology Building Society and Triodos are part of that network. So yeah, whether you're looking for savings accounts, whether you're looking for current accounts, there are options available to you. And yeah, please do come and talk on the Just Money stall if you're thinking of switching or you're wanting to switch your church. And we can talk you through the options that are available to you.
Thanks, Rosie. Drew, you want to come in on greenwashing at all? Or Rosie, did you want to say a bit more about that?
Cool. Yeah, another form of greenwashing is environmental social governance, or ESG, which the banks, what they do is they coach their commercial customers on these methods of making themselves look nicer. I mean, some of them there is a positive outcome to it, but to my mind, an awful lot of it is greenwashing. And when I see someone saying their title is that we're head of ESG, yeah, that's head of greenwashing.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to come to you, Sharon, first for this one, but then feel free, anyone else, to contribute. Is there a tension for churches and institutions in weighing up secure the need to get an income, get a return on investment, and investing for good, for climate impact? Do you want to say a bit about that, and whether there's a theological reflection at all that can be done around investment decisions?
Yeah, so it is a key issue in this area. And I think however radical you might feel it's important to be with your personal finances, and however generous you want to be, you probably find in talking to a finance officer within your church institution that they have rather different priorities. And I think, like Rosie was saying about talking people's language, I think we need to do a bit of research so we can actually talk about how some of these investments in climate solutions actually make really good financial sense as well. So some of the early adopters that we've featured in case studies in our report, Church Investments in Climate Solutions, have actually told us how they've had better than average returns on some of their funds which have got more investments in climate solutions. So actually, investing in wind, in solar, in transport, in industrial changes, there is significant returns to be made from these investments. So it's not just a philanthropic, charitable decision to say we're going to invest in climate solutions. Now, having said that, some of the solutions that people might choose to invest perhaps a smaller amount in might be more looking at social good. And particularly if your church partners with a church in the Global South, then there may be projects that you choose to support and you want to invest in. And you actually do that understanding that your top priority in that particular investment is not about financial returns. And we know that there is now real backing for saying institutions and their ethical value choices lining up with the values of their institution is a good reason for affecting their investments. So it's not just about fiduciary duty and making money on investments. But I think showing to the finance people that you're talking to that you understand that actually they want to be responsible with the money and they want to make returns so as their church or organisation can do good things with that money. They don't just want to make money to keep it for themselves. They want to make money so as they can give it to, you know, church urban fund type projects or give it out to the mission of the church. So understanding the reason that they want good returns is to do good things, to pay people's pensions. There's all sorts of good reasons why they feel like they have to be responsible with the investments. But even within responsible investments, there are good choices that they can be making.
Thanks, Sharon. Do either of you want to come in on that one? No? Okay. So then my final question before we open to the floor. So do be having a think about what your question is going to be. So for Drew first, you talked about the National Trust campaign that you've been spearheading to get them to quit Barclays. Their former chair, Sir Simon Jenkins, has said that this is nothing more than posturing and virtue signalling. So I just wanted to ask what you think about that. And I suppose particularly, and you said a little bit about this already, what is it that you can say about this campaign that means that it actually works, or what progress has been made?
Just to put a bit more in context, for those who may not know, the National Trust is the largest nature conservation charity in the UK, I think maybe in Europe. It's the flagship of civil society. It has 6 million members. That's about 10% of the adult population of the country. So a move by National Trust towards more ethical banking would be a great step. That's why we're targeting them. And when we did the resolution, by the way, it meant we got our critique of Barclays through 6 million letterboxes. A lot went straight into recycling, I know, but it's still, we got it through 6 million letterboxes. And we just achieved something similar with our summer campaign, which we've been running, and it's still ongoing. And we've been to over 50 National Trust sites I Love National Trust, but not Barclays, posters, and engaging with the staff and with the with visitors there. Obviously, the number of visitors we saw was trifling compared to the total membership, but the key thing was the staff. Because there's internal pressure that they can put. And another bonus we got was that the National Trust messaged all their 500 sites, all the management of those sites, telling them that we were going to be going along and instructing them on how to respond, and also telling them it was all about them banking with Barclays. So thank you, National Trust. You got that message over to all your staff. It does irk me that Sir Simon Jenkins, a Knight of the Realm, former editor of The Times and The Evening Standard, still writes a column in The Guardian weekly. Actually, quite like a lot of what he writes. Was writing a column in the Times, criticising them. I thought, what right has he got to criticise ordinary people for getting a bit uppity?
Fair enough. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm finished.
Okay,
I'm finished. Just yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us here might have read the Old Testament, and there's a story about someone called Jonah was sent on a mission by God to Nineveh. And there's a verse in the Bible, isn't there, where he said, "Listen, God, what you're sending me on is just virtue signaling, isn't it? But we know how that worked out, don't we?" We have faith, not hope, and a faith that the earth will be restored and relationships will be healed. And that's why we do this.
That's really important. Thank you. We're going to ask Rory to help us with our Q&A now. So I think you've got that microphone. Great.
How, as an employee, do I work internally to make change when I have no control over the decisions that the company?
What a great question. And I think there are many people in our churches and congregations who work for those banks. And I think it's a really, really good conversation to have. Many people I know, young people going into work in the finance sector. Um, I I think that there are spaces to have conversation with others. So I think that's a place to start. So there are kind of peer spaces where you can have those conversations. Organisation the Finance Innovation Lab does some really good work with the sector, provides training and spaces for people who work in the banking sector to come together to talk about issues particularly related to sustainability. So I think that's one place, is to seek out where there are spaces where you can have conversations within the sector and with others. I mean, I don't know if others on the panel have suggestions for, you know, practical things that you can do from within. I worked for Christian Aid for a long time, and I know that we were putting pressure on them internally around their pension and their banking. I know that's a very different context, but I think the more people that are having conversations that can go upwards through those chains of command, and that there's a sense of you've been able to give your feedback and you've been persistent with it. I don't know how much impact that has, but I think it's well worth doing. But it'd be really interesting, I know, to hear maybe anyone else in the room later, stay around and talk if you do work for one of those five banks and you have ideas for what that looks like. I mean, it'd be really good to equip you and empower you to do that. So I'm not sure that's the best answer to your question, but an encouragement. And thank you for having, yeah, for having that courage and that those conversations.
Yeah, that's a really tough question. And I obviously you can't do anything that's going to put your job, your family circumstances at risk. You can't do that. I know from hearing the chair at the AGMs that they talk about good protesters and bad protesters. I think you can maintain conversations over the water cooler, whatever you have there, and all of that. That will help having conversations within the staff. But I think the moment you start associating yourself with a campaign, you're putting yourself at risk.
I've got a question for Drew. You talked about the campaign with National Trust and that it's ongoing, and you've got another resolution this year. What's that resolution and how's it different?
The governance with the National Trust is you can't repeat a resolution for 3 years, so it would be 2026 before we could repeat a resolution concerning banking or Barclays. But we need to keep a conversation going with them. And so we put in a resolution this year, which is looking for a greater share of the trust's budget to go into climate mitigation measures and into more resources for works that will address damage to the lands and the National Trust across its estate. So more for the countryside rather than the stately homes. Because the strategy is that we need to be able to continue talking to them as a critical friend. That's what behind the strategy. But we'll only win the vote if you get out and vote. And if you are in the National Trust, all the voting papers will be coming only by email this year. And they'll be coming out on the week of the 2nd of September. So look out for them. Cast your votes in favour of the resolution. Get all your contacts to do that as well. And if you'd like to go to the annual general meeting in Newcastle on the 2nd of November, then there's an opportunity to request tickets when you get those voting papers.
Thank you. I've got a question about high street presence. I think the reason why a lot of us stay with the big five banks is because most of them are still pretty well represented on the high street. And while we may, most of us, get into electronic banking, there are times when it's really useful to go into a branch to try and sort out a problem like a serious scam, for instance. Could you tell us a bit more about the alternative, the greener banks, and the extent to which they have a presence on the high street?
I'll try and take that on quickly. Obviously, there are lots of banks that I could talk about. The ones that do have a high street presence would be banks like Nationwide. So building societies By default, really, I would consider them greener banks because their very structure means that they're not lending to and investing in the kind of sectors that we might be concerned about. So if you have a building society, if you have Nationwide, that would be a good option. The co-op does have some branches available as well. I know that that can be a bit patchy. And we've got a conversation happening later about the, you know, about inclusive banking and about access to banking services, because that's another justice issue, isn't it? People do need access to banking services, and that is dwindling, and not everyone has access or is able to access online banking. So I'm well aware there's lots of different ethical and justice issues that are kind of intersecting. So what we do need is a fairer, greener banking sector that is available to everyone to use. So there's a kind of wider conversation to have. For churches that are looking for greener banks, this again is an issue because you're often wanting a bank that you can go into to pay cash into. So we do look at that in our guide, and we explain which of the ethical banks have relationships with the high street banks or with a post office where you can go in. So there are ways around it of banking with a smaller, more ethical bank, but then using the kind of over-the-counter services of the post office. So I won't go into the detail of each of those individual banks, but happy to explain a bit more about that. We are really aware that that is something that is of concern, because you do need to access certain banking services, and not all of the smaller banks are able to do that. One of the things that we've been doing at Just Money is to advocate for the needs of churches and charities with some of those smaller banks, and pointing out where the barriers are. Because I think there is a motivation to switch amongst lots of churches, but there are practical barriers that prevent that from happening. So one of the things that we're really keen to hear are, what are those barriers? And for individuals as well, so that when we sit down with those banks, we can say, these are the reasons why people want to switch to you, and these are the things that are preventing them from doing so. And I think if we can champion that sector, that's growing, but has limited resource and capacity compared to the big high street banks, we can do what we can to support them, but also to advocate for the needs of individuals and churches who would like to bank more ethically. That's something that we can try and do.
Am I right to just to make a comment there? But I spoke to Patrick Watt, the head of Christian Aid, last year, and he pointed out to me that Barclays are primarily a US investment bank. High street banking in the UK is really a very small part of their operation. And again, if you look at their policies, they're moving towards what they call having pods. So they would set them up in car parks, at shopping centres, and these things would pop up, and they would service not only Barclays but the other banks. And that's the direction they're looking in. They're closing more and more of their high street banks. So it seems to me that switching to an ethical bank, which is online right now, that's a very, very good move.
Thank you, everyone. Some really helpful information on banks. You've touched on pensions and investments. I imagine many people in the audience may have more money in a pension or investments than they've got in their bank. I confess I've got an interest. I work for financial advisors, who's a B Corp, so it's something I've looked into a lot. But my question would be, are our pensions and investments also a lever we can use to have some influence? Is it worth trying to change? It is an area that's probably much more complex to navigate for all of us than banks. And so if we do want to make a change, how do we start to navigate that? What sources of information are there for people who care about this topic and want to think about how to change their pensions and investments to enact their values?
That's a really good question. We've really focused today on banking in particular, but absolutely pensions is another lever that can be used. At Just Money, we have a hub called Money Makes Change on our website with lots of signposting where you can find out about what you can do with your pension. For some people, that's not very much, depending on where you're working. But for some people, there are choices that you can make, and there are things that you can find out about there. Rosie, I don't know if you want to say a little bit more about that.
I guess just to emphasise that absolutely, yes, pensions can be a really good lever. There's about £3 trillion in UK pensions. It's a massive amount of money, which we need to direct more towards shaping the kind of world that we need to live in when we retire. So I think we need to have more conversations and raise people's awareness about the power of pensions as well. But yeah, do take a look on the website. There are resources there to signpost you to look at, like, to think about the kinds of questions, if you have a financial advisor, that you might ask about things like negative screening and positive impact investing. But I'd also, you know, I encourage people to think of themselves, like, you might not think that you're an investor, but if you have a pension, it's obviously invested on your behalf. So, you know, think about what that means for you and the kind of questions you might want to be asking of your pension provider. What we really need is more transparency, and some pension providers are better than others at providing that. But you should be able to, like, it's, I think you should know where your pension's invested. And so if it's not easy for you to find out, then that would be my first step, is to try and dig that, get that detail.
I was just briefly going to add that the Church of England Pensions Board did move their money out of fossil fuels and are increasing the money that they're investing in climate solutions. I think they're not considered to be cutting edge or radical in their investment policies generally. They're making the arguments for how this is a responsible choice. They tried to engage for a long time with fossil fuel companies and then made the decision that actually that wasn't working. So I think pointing to the fact that it is possible for big pension funds to move their money, pointing at some of the other bigger pensions funds, I think in the Netherlands in particular, in Sweden, who are really taking these steps to decide these are not good investments. This is a decision that we're making for financial long-term sense as well as ethics. And so pointing to examples of pensions funds that have made these changes might be helpful.
We've got time for one more quick question and brief answers.
Hi. I know that there is a figure that for an individual to make a change, it's actually something like 20 times more effective to move their money than for any other single thing that they can do. Am I correct in that? I think it's something like 20 times more effective. Can someone clarify that?
So I'm aware of that that's a figure that Make My Money Matter use as part of their campaigning. I think there has been some debate around what the research behind that figure. I think not to say that there isn't a level of impact, but how do you measure that? And are you double counting different things? So for balance, Ethical Consumer has done an analysis around that piece of research, which I think maybe brings that slightly down. But I still think it is a really powerful conversation starter to say you might not have thought that your money has an impact, but it does. So, yeah, I think that would be my cautious answer to that question.
I think the other thing some of you will have heard, was it Simon Sharp who was here yesterday, and he was talking a lot about how we need to leverage our lifestyle changes to have more impact. And a lot of what you've been hearing about in terms of, for example, the big bank switch, we're trying to get people to switch bank accounts collectively and tell their bank about it. There are ways that we can make changes that have even more impact because we have a ripple effect within our communities, in the media, with the banks themselves. So there are things we can do that have a definite impact, and then there's a way of making that impact even bigger. Does anyone else want to come in on that final question? Otherwise, I think we are done. Yep, absolutely. Thanks so much to our panellists, to Sharon, to Drew, and to Rosie. Thanks to all of you for being here and being part of the conversation. Operation NOAH and Just Money Movement have stalls over here. Christian Climate Action, come and talk to Drew or anyone in the T-shirts. And people will be around with some clipboards with QR codes and a few resources if you want to carry on the conversation.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.